Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. And it's funny, for the first couple of years that we were doing the show, we had a lot of musicians on, a lot of actors and directors and some authors, and yet one of the most natural go-to ideas for guests we didn't really approach too much. Never really had too many comedians on. And then I realized what a loss and what an ideal opportunity it is to be able to talk to funny people, both of the current generation and also from generations past. And so in more recent times, we've talked to people like Pat Cooper. And so I'm very, very excited to be chatting with a veteran comedian and a really, really fun and funny guy. Hi, is this Marty Allen?
No, Brad Pitt.
It's so good to hear from you.
Hello there, Dave.
Hello there. Oh, that's right. I should have said hello there.
Yes. It has now become a national greeting. In fact, when I was in England doing shows, it was hello there. I got them all crazy. When I went to France, it was bonjour there. And when I went to Israel, it was shalom there.
Now, is it true, though, that that came out by accident? You went blank at one point on stage and...
No, I was at that... When I was Steve Rossi and I, we were appearing at the Latin Casino in Philadelphia, and he asked me something, and I kind of blanked. I don't know what caused it. And I looked at him, and very quickly I said, "Hello there." He looked at me, and the audience started laughing, and I kept saying, "Hello there, hello there." And so he came back with another question. Mm-hmm. I kept repeating almost like a parrot, "Hello there, hello there." And after the show, when we were out in the audience, and people came by, they said, "Hey, hello there, hello there." And I suddenly realized I had hit upon a phrase almost like, "You want to buy a duck," or "I'm a bad boy," or, you know, the ones made famous by Lou Costello or Joe Penner.
Right.
Wait all your life to find some kind of a catchphrase. And then after that, every place we went when we first walked out, before he asked me the first question, and he says, "Here's Marty," I went, "Hello there." And it caught fire. And you wait all your life, and sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not lucky. And in our case, we were lucky. It became a... And now I sign all my pictures, "Hello there." My license plate is "Hello there." Kid went to school, and he spelled it "Hello there" because I spell it H-E-L-L-O-D-E-R-E, exclamation point. And he wrote it that way. And teacher said, "It's wrong." He said, "No, no, I heard the comedian. That's the way he writes it, and that's the way he says it."
Oh, that's great. And I guess the perfect catchphrase also, because you can
also
open with
it's a very warm greeting. It's like I say, when you first walk out, you know, and if the audience is with you, you kind of look at them and go, "Hello there." And then all the routines that we did, the fighter and the drunk and everything, always the first thing I said was "Hello there." Went on "What's My Line," mm-hmm. and I wrote on the board "Hello there." They were all masked. And John Daly, you know, was introducing us, and they were all blindfolded. It was Woody Allen and Dorothy Kilgallen and all friends of ours. And for a while, we had them fooled, but then it was Dorothy Kilgallen who suddenly, she picked up on the audience reaction, the way they were screaming.
Oh, yeah. But actually...
Like Bobby Soxers, it was at the height of our...
Yeah.
Our big success. After we had appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show with the Beatles.
Wait a minute, on the same program? The same episode?
Dave, 1964, we were on the show with the Beatles.
Okay. Okay. Wow. I mean...
First came to America, and when I walked... In fact, there were thousands of little girls screaming and hollering, and we were at that theater on 50, you know, where Dave Letterman does his show.
The Ed Sullivan Theater, yeah.
With the Ed Sullivan Theater, and we were on the show, and I kept trying to think, what could I say to get these kids, in, you know, because they kept screaming about the Beatles and everything. And when he introduced us, I walked out and I said, "Hello there, I'm Ringo's mother." And the kids start screaming, "It's his mother, it's his mother." They didn't even care.
Well, you probably had the same hair at that point. I don't know.
No, at that time, I had the afro.
Right.
I had the crazy hair. In fact, I backstage, the Beatles had no idea who we were, and I wanted to break the ice, and I walked over. John Lennon was getting ready. He was more or less strumming his guitar and singing to himself. And I walked over and I said, "John," he looked at me, he says, "Yes." I said, "A lot of people mistake me for you." And he looked at me like, "Oh my God." That's a famous story.
Did you, though, you and I guess Steve Rossi, did you resent the whole sea change in comedy and rock and roll that the 60s represented? I mean, because of people like the Beatles and Lenny Bruce and the whole invasion.
Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor, these were all kind of people. Well, today it's a lot different. You know, they got the comedy clubs. And there are a lot of comedians, but I relate to that, to Don Rickles, and I relate to Billy Crystal, and I relate to the beginnings of Lenny Bruce, who's brilliant. I relate to Richard Pryor, who I thought was unbelievable because he was the first one to do street talk and make it funny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these were people that I think of, and I even have a list. I also think Benny Hill was one of the funniest sketch comics that I had ever seen in my life.
I have to say my father would be so happy to hear you say that. My father is a huge Benny Hill fan, and I find him completely sort of underrated and forgotten. And he was brilliant. He was wonderful.
When I made the list, I said Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, Milton Berle for his quick jokes. There's a whole list, like I say, Billy Crystal, and today I would, today one of the guys, in fact somebody asked me who I like, I think Craig Ferguson is excellent. Craig Ferguson is funny and quite brilliant in his reactions and in his interviews.
Yeah, he's very sharp and very, very
smart. Very sharp.
Yeah. Can I ask?
That's who I relate to. When I'm home, if I go to see, mainly Karen and I are very big on Royal Caribbean. In fact, we're leaving. We do two shows. Well, as it is now, Louis Anderson has a theater here at the Palace Station. And he had to go away for six nights, and he asked his manager, would it be possible to get Marty Allen and Karen Blackwell to fill in? And we came in, and we did a job for him, and then they asked us if we would do afternoon shows Saturday and Sunday at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think anybody would. I would say 4 or 5, 4 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday. I don't know. I said I'll give it a shot, and we scored very heavily. And we do two, and we did two in October. We're doing this Saturday and Sunday, and then we do two in December, and it's been very successful. In fact, I didn't think anybody would come on a Sunday afternoon. I kept saying, "Football, football." But people came, and
well, wives don't want to watch
leaving.
Football. You know.
We leave Monday morning and go to Indian Casino in Milwaukee, and then we go to New Jersey and do two one-nighters, and we get back on Royal Caribbean. We do a lot of Royal Caribbean shifts. We headline on it.
Yeah.
And Karen is, without a doubt, a triple threat. She sings like you can't believe. She plays piano And they're now calling us the new George Burns and Gracie Allen, only I'm Gracie Allen.
Well, that is, can I ask, is Karen your wife or your life partner, or how do you refer, are you married?
27 years.
Oh, Mazel Tov, very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I see her called your partner, and I know she's your partner on stage, but yeah. I wasn't sure whether you were legally...
Listen, in regards to Alan and Rossi,
yeah.
we were like, next to Martin and Lewis, I think we were the number one comedy team in the country.
Oh, absolutely.
And we kept going around and around. We scored very heavily. And then finally, I said, we keep going around. We play in the same places. The Copacabana, which was the mecca of show business. We were brought together by Nat King Cole. And we played with Nat, we played with Sinatra, we played with Shirley Bassey, we played with Lena Horne, Paul Anka, we played with everybody. And then I start getting calls. They wanted me on certain shows, like, if you remember, Beat the Clock.
Oh, sure.
Game shows. And then I got a call of Hollywood Squares to be on with Paul Lynn and Charlie Weaver. And I scored with them, and they can't use two people. They can use one. We even did Password with Alan Ludden. And then I got a call to do some dramatic things. And Steve and I split very amicably. I think we're the only comedy team to break up and still remain friends. He lives in Las Vegas. And I see him occasionally, but we parted very friendly.
Oh, that's great.
And then I became a regular on Hollywood Squares, and then I got a call to do a dramatic bit on Big Valley with Barbara Stanwyck, and I played a Jonah. You know what a Jonah is?
It's like a holy fool kind of thing?
He's like the bad... when I came to the ranch, all the cattle ran away, the rains came. And all the guys on the ranch said, it's my fault because I'm a Jonah. But like a bad luck omen kind of thing. And Barbara Sandwich and Linda Evans fought against them. And it was a beautiful... And I was nominated for a couple awards for the dramatic. And I did a couple other things. I went to Malta and did a movie with Connie Stevens. And the guy from the Avengers, and you know, and I diversified myself, and I had no intention whatsoever of ever getting. Then I start working shows by myself, and I had no idea. And then one day I went in a restaurant in Los Angeles, and. Karen was on the road playing piano. She's from Mississippi. And she was working in Chicago. And she didn't like being on the road alone. And finally she decided to take a break. And a friend of hers owned a very famous restaurant on the Sunset Strip. And he asked her, would you become like the manager, the maitre d'? And she says, why? Had no idea what it was. And they said, well, you're intelligent, you'll be able to. And next thing you know, she was managing the restaurant and writing music at home. And I walked in with my manager. I took one look, and she says, oh, Mr. Allen, can we help you? I said, yeah, I'd like a fruit salad. And she went, and I wrote all over the menu, I like the way you look in that dress. In fact, I like that more than the fruit salad. And next thing I know, I took her out. We dated, and I went to her house. I see the piano, and I said, is this just an ornament, or do you play? She sat down and played, and I said, oh, what are you doing as a man? So she told me she didn't like being on the road alone. So I was going to my hometown, which is Pittsburgh. I'm a Steeler fan. I sleep in a Steeler helmet, by the way.
Okay.
And I on the road. And then we went on the road and start working together. And then I had that brief return with Steve for several months, and she opened the show for us. And then Steve and I parted again, and then it became Karen Blackwell and Marty Allen. And it is utterly, well, it's a blockbuster show. It is.
Well, what makes a good straight person? Be it Steve Rossi or be it Karen Blackwell, what do you look for in someone who's feeding you lies?
They know not only how to, more like you, Dave, they're interviewing the comedian, but with a great sense of enthusiasm, and be able to relate to the audience, show that they are like part of the audience in the interviewing. It like they stepped out of the audience and started asking me questions. Hmm. But the byplay between Karen and I,
yeah,
it is utterly phenomenal. It works. We do one-nighters and we appeared in Vegas, and we just keep going.
So happy to be talking with veteran comedian Marty Allen on Dave's Gone By. Can I ask, over the years, especially when you were with Steve and also now with Karen,
yeah,
did you write all of your own material, or did
came
you also
up with different routines? I took a couple of the routines that Steve and I did and redid them and brought them up to date.
Oh, cool.
You know, like the famous drunk routine. Then I do a doctor routine. Our hot item right now is I'm playing Lady Gaga's father.
Oh, really?
And I come out with the multicolored wig and the wigs and the glasses and the crazy outfit with the chain with hot dogs on it. And
yeah.
And she says to me, "You're really Lady Gaga's father?" "Yes, I'm her father." "And what is your name?" "I'm Daddy Dada."
Aww.
And then we start to do routine, and it's been very, very funny.
And I think it's wonderful that you are still writing your own material, too.
Oh, we write a lot of, you know, and we add lines, you know, I try to take lines out of the news and take topical, and do a monologue of topical humor, like, I said, Kim Kardashian married 72 days. She found a new love, her checkbook.
Oh, yeah.
And I says Obama sent a battalion of women with PMS to Afghanistan, and they asked him why he did that. He says, "Because they're meaner than the Marines and they retain water."
That's very good.
Up to date things.
You know, that's what I wanted to also impress upon the listeners to this program. And
I do in the monologue. I do mainly all topical things.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah,
she comes out. She opens the show singing three numbers and then introduces me. I come out. I do a monologue of topical humor. And then we go into one of the wine taster routine. And then I go off and then she sings a tribute to the Beatles, which is unbelievable. She gets more standing ovations from that than anything. Well, she's a phenomena. And then I come back out and I do a routine about the older people in Florida, which is very funny, and things that happen because we played Florida and I picked up a lot of natural humor about Florida.
Well, sure, you play the dinner buffet at 2:30 in the afternoon, that kind of thing, yeah. Yeah.
Then she sings a song she had written about our wedding.
Oh.
Our wedding vows, which has become the number one wedding song in America. And then after that,
what song is that? What song is that?
It's called Wedding Vows. I'll mail it to you.
Okay.
I'll mail you a copy. You can play it. In fact, she's got a new song coming out now called
Marty, you married a shiksa? You married a non-Jewish girl, Marty? What did your parents say? Oh, yay, yay.
Oh, she's very lovable.
I'm sure.
We were married by a rabbi.
Oh, okay. It's okay, then. I forgive you.
Yeah.
My people forgive you. But let's turn this conversation in a completely different direction, because reading Wikipedia and some bios...
Yeah, I never thought I'd remarry. I was married to a wonderful, beautiful woman who was an executive at the Concord Hotel in the Catskills.
Ooh.
Her name was Lorraine Cragel. She was known as Frenchie. She was from Paris, and she was the one of the executives, and we had a very happy marriage, and she passed on, and I never thought I'd marry again, because it was such a beautiful, wonderful marriage, and then as time went by, then when I met Karen, I went one more time. That's a story.
Well, that's actually a beautiful story.
It is.
But actually, what I wanted to ask you about had to do even going before that. Is it true that you have medals of honor or bravery from your time in the military?
I was in World War II.
Yeah.
In fact, do you know how old I am?
Aren't you 89 years old?
Yeah, I'll be 90 in March.
Good luck. Please, yes, you should be. I mean, that's wonderful. So, yeah, you were in World War II.
Ian Rickles and Checky.
You know, I interviewed Checky Green a couple of weeks ago for this show, so he's also been on the program.
Didn't he just retire?
No, he's still working. He's still doing his thing.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Because when I came home, I went to see him, and I always go see Rickles, and I get a big kick out of Rickles. I started laughing. Because I know what he's going to do, but, you know, if you know Rickles' routine, where he takes off on all the different people.
Sure. I mean, you're watching a master at work, even if you know the jokes.
I go to enjoy. I don't go to... When I go to see somebody, I don't go to criticize. I go to... As a customer who just wants to enjoy, and that's what I love. It's been my whole thing through life. I don't criticize other comedians. I don't criticize. I may not like some of the things they do, but I applaud the fact that they're working and that they're with their talent.
Yeah.
But
we veered away from. You were going to tell me how you got those.
What I was going to say.
Yeah.
Is, I think I'm one of the few guys left that does a clean show.
Oh, well.
In fact,
yeah.
I say to the audience, I said, I'm from another era. I was brought together by Nat King Cole. I work with Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and everybody. And I wanted to prove tonight that you can do a clean, funny show without resorting to the vulgar humor of today. And the audience goes crazy.
Well, you do a little double entendre. You used to do that with Rossi. You'd push the envelope a little bit.
No. Very... Not the way it is today, you know.
Well, no, not, of course not. But for then, if you're talking about 40 or 50 years ago, you know, you'd sneak in a little bit here and there, a raised eyebrow, a little bit of a thing, you know, which now would be G-rated. But back then was borderline PG-13. You know, that's part of being a humorist, is playing for the times, I think.
Yeah.
But please, how did you get those medals in World War II?
Well, it was just, what happened was, I was helping to, we were in Italy, I was part of, in the Air Force, and we had the heavy bombers, the B-24s, and we were the ones that bombed Palesti, the oil fields in Romania, one of the most dangerous missions of all time. And the plane was loaded with bombs, and we were refueling. I was doing guard duty and helping. in the plane, truck 4,000 gallons of high octane fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the two hoses up on the wings, and two guys are putting the gasoline in. And in order to get the gasoline through, it had a motor on the back of the truck. And the motor brought the gasoline into the plane. And somehow the motor caught on fire. Well, the motor caught on fire. The two guys pulled the hoses out of the wing and they jumped off.
Yeah.
I think they were on their way to the Vatican.
Yeah.
And I pulled the truck away and somehow managed to get the flames out. And ran back in the cover of the two guns in the front of the plane. Had some sparks. And I got that out, and then I went in where the bombs were to make sure that...
Wow.
Just covered with my jacket, more or less through myself, to make sure that none of the sparks caught fire on the side of the plane. By this time, they came with a snow thing, and I walked out. They couldn't believe it, and they had an investigation and showed what I did. I was awarded the Soldier's Medal, which is a very high honor.
Yeah, I mean, that may be one of your proudest, despite all your accomplishments as an entertainer, I'm
sure. Oh, I'll tell you, I got in trouble. My mother, she really raised hell with me for doing that.
She said, you should have run. You should have just let...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what a mother would say.
You know it. I didn't send you to the war to do that.
I love it. That's wonderful. Do you have memories of the Great Depression growing up?
Well, I wasn't in the Depression.
Well, you were alive, I mean, during the
30s. No, but I don't remember that. I remember Roosevelt and that time of my life.
And okay.
When I graduated high school, I think it was 1940, and then the war started, and I was drafted.
Can I ask, you are, and I'm sure you will admit this.
Got out of service, I started playing little nightclubs around my hometown and became more or less the local comic, you know, the hot guy. And then one day they said to me, you're going to be with a girl singer in this particular club. I said, who is it? And they said, Sarah Vaughan.
Oh, my.
Well, I almost passed out. And I appeared with her. She took a liking to me. She called Nat King Cole. And then I started working with Nat, because in those days, every singer that went out had a comedian with them.
Right.
If you were Patti Page, you had a comedian. If it was Paul Anka, you had a comedian. If you were Sinatra, you had a comedian that would, you know, open the show, did
sure
15 or 20 minutes. And Steve Rossi was a production singer at the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas. He was the guy that sang while the girls danced, you know, back and forth. And I was now in Chicago with E.E. Gourmet at the Shaperie.
Uh-huh.
And Steve told Matt he was tired of just being a production singer. He'd like to do something else. Well, Matt said, I have a comedian. Maybe if the two of you got together, it might be a very good comedy team, almost like Martin and Lewis. So he called me, and I wasn't really interested. I said, well, fly out, and we'll talk about it. So he flew to Chicago, and he looked like Rock Hudson, and he sang phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, we'll give it a shot. And we start playing little clubs. And you can tell within one or two clubs if the audience is reacting to what you're doing.
Right.
There's a certain thing that you know. Either you know you're going to catch fire or nothing's going to be flat. And as we started to do the little clubs, we noticed the audience was picking up all the little things that we were doing and reacting to us. And when we were ready,
the jump from being, you know, really well-received in small clubs and making a name for yourself to being, like, really, as you said, the biggest entertainers.
We start doing the Ed Sullivan show. I tell people we did more Sullivan shows than Ed Sullivan. And then we start doing Password and Hollywood Squares, and we appeared on all the, you know, the different shows.
Sure.
And caught fire.
I mean, that is...
Earl Wilson, the columnist, and Dorothy Kiyoka was always writing about Eleanor Rossi, and that's more or less how it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, we are talking with Marty Allen. Do you have a couple more minutes with us, Marty?
Yeah.
Oh, great, great.
Well, I don't charge extra for it.
Oh, well, that's really, really kind of you. I appreciate that. can I ask, going even all the way back to, like, growing up, because you'll be the first to admit, I imagine, that you have an unusual physical look. You've got big eyes, and you had that hair that, of course, you make a comic persona. Did that make it difficult for you, though, before you were a comedian, when you were in, like, elementary school or grade school or high school? Did you get picked on?
Well, high school, I was like the clown. I was the guy, if there was a hayride or something, I was the one that entertained them while all the kids were either necking, as we call it, or I was the guy that more or less made them laugh with different... I kept doing all kind of crazy things, but
so it
happened in high school. That's when it more or less... That's when I had a feel that I thought maybe I would try. I write a lot, and I love journalism, and I had a great desire to become a reporter. Because I look great in a trench coat.
Yeah.
And that's where I thought I would go to college and do that. But then I went with my cousin to California and started playing little clubs, and more or less that's how I got into it. And besides playing in my hometown. And then I said, well, I'm going to give it a shot. And that's the way it all happened.
Do you have any regrets along the course of your life and career? I mean, it's been a pretty upside through the whole thing. It's been pretty darn good.
Uh-huh.
But any choices you would have done differently?
I don't know if I would have gone more into dramatics or not. I like acting, and I've had some very good shots at it and done some dramatic thing. And I don't know if I would have gone more into acting. But I think basically I like comedy and humor and the fact that I could make... I did tours of when the guys were coming back from Vietnam. I went to the hospitals.
Right.
And
yeah,
they would see me and, oh my God, Marty Allen. And they, you know, they couldn't believe it. And I'd just go bed to bed and tell them jokes. And to me that was a fulfillment. And it was something that I felt I wanted to do, because any man or woman that serves, they've done a great job for our country, and they have to be rewarded in some way. And if you can reward them either financially or through humor or something, just to make them know that they are thought of with a great deal of respect. And I love my country, and if I can do something along those lines, I feel I've done a job.
Well, and the country has been good to you.
Yeah.
You know, you've had a very, very, really... And I don't want to put that in the past. I mean, as you said, you still have a very busy schedule. Have you had to slow down? Have you had health scares, or have you been knockwood, fine?
So far, so good.
Alibi. I mean,
I work out in the gym every day. I'm on the treadmill.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you're 89 years old. I mean, it's just it's extraordinary. Yeah.
I was on the treadmill for an hour, and some guy turned it on.
Oh, Marty Allen, this has been an absolute delight. I hope you have enjoyed it, too.
I'm glad I was able to do this for you, Dave.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, and I certainly wish you 90 more years of comedy and joy and fun.
I wish you success with your program and continued success.
Thank you.
Have you done a lot of many comedians? You did Shecky?
We've done Shecky. We had Pat Cooper. So a few lesser known people, more young people, and I don't remember them off the top of my head. But oh, and Rusty Warren, if you remember her, she was on the show.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, Rusty Warren, and who else? Uncle Floyd, although he's kind of from a little bit different kind of an entertainer. But yeah, I want to get more comedians on the show because I think that's kind of important, and I love comedy more than almost anything. So,
yeah, I know a friend of mine, Gilbert Gottfried. That's who you.
Oh, I would. Kill, well, not literally. I would kill to have Gilbert Gottfried on the show. My gosh. You know him? He's a friend of yours?
He'd probably have a terrific story to tell you.
I'm sure he would. If you could hook me up, that would be, I would be thrilled. That would be wonderful.
I don't have a number on him, but I know he lives in New York. So, if I can, I can't think.
But how did you guys become friends?
Well, Karen and I were in New York. We were appearing at Feinstein's.
Mm.
I have a friend who's from Milwaukee, and he's a friend of Gottfried, and he brought Gilbert to see Karen and I. And then when he was here, I went to see him. Very nice fella, very funny man. And that's how we became friends.
That's wonderful.
Not really close, but, you know, very... admiration for one another, probably through our humor, something like that.
Yeah, no, totally understandable. It's kind of like
He seemed like a very nice guy. That's how we became very good friends.
All I need to do is to thank you again, very, very much.
You're welcome, Dave.
And have a wonderful and many more years and much more success.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye bye now.